Hey, you're listening to Blindsight. Let's go. Mental health isn't something to take lightly. It's time to fight. It's time to thrive. Let's do this.
Hey there, welcome to Blindsight. This is your co-host, Bill Lundgren, with Jonathan Price. And we have a very important subject to talk about today. Of course, all our subjects are important, but this one is particularly something people don't talk about, and that has to do with those forbidden words, sex and intimacy. And the fact that, the things our mothers and fathers didn't teach us, we have to deal with as adults. And they didn't do a very good job with some people anyway. So anyway, Jonathan, how are you?
I'm good. The weekend was wonderful. A couple weeks ago, went to go see Hamilton. So that was really nice. They did a good job.
Great show.
Oh, it's a great wonderful show. I love going to the musicals. And what I really love, and so because I'm an actual music nerd and I like musicals, I really watch pit orchestras and conductors and listen to the music behind it. And there's so many technical things about the pit orchestra that people don't understand. So people think, oh, they're just playing to recording. Nope. You've got a group of 25 to 30 musicians sitting underneath the stage, all working together to make something really, really incredible. And it just sounds like the recordings. And a lot of people just don't understand that. Mm-hmm. And so it's really fun for me to watch that. And then I also like watching the scene transitions. So the people coming on and off the set when they're doing set design or set transitions, or I like to watch the auxiliary people because they're the ones who are really making the show happen, not just the leads and that kind of stuff. Most people focus on that. But I tell you what, knowing the intricacies and all that kind of stuff of what's happening behind the scenes is so wonderful to me. And I just appreciate it on a whole other level after, seeing different shows. So it's good.
Yeah.
What about you, Bill?
Well, I'm dealing with catastrophes in my condo, but, because they had a pipe leak and all that kind of stuff. But Hamilton is one of my favorite shows.
Oh, nice.
And I've seen it 3 or 4 times. And I was raised going to musicals. I mean, when I was a little boy, I was going to musicals. So that's been like a meal to me, just to nurture me whenever I get to a show. So I'm glad you had that experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's awesome. Well,
so let's introduce our host, Dan, or our guest, rather, Dan Purcell, who's a sex and intimacy coach. And you don't hear about that title used that much, but this is why we invited him on. So, Jonathan, do you want to do the honors?
Well, yeah, I guess, Dan, I'm just going to start off with the first question. We were talking about musicals, and creating music in the bedroom is something that's very important to, I guess, everybody, or I would assume it's important to everybody. But tell us a little bit about your background and why you got into this industry, and we'll start there.
Oh, my. Well, I think I'm the...
the loaded question.
Yeah, it is. I would never foresee myself doing what I do now. If you asked me like 10 years ago what I'd do. But I got into it because I wanted to solve problems in my own marriage. And once we started to solve these problems, I'm like, holy cow, how come no one told me these things before?
Yeah.
There's so much goodness on the other side. And I wanted to share that with everyone. So that's how I really got into this work. And I've been doing it for 7 years now. And I absolutely love it.
That's fantastic. What are some of the basic misconceptions that you see when you're working with couples talking about sex and intimacy?
I think a lot of it has to do with, first of all, sex is a very private thing. Mm-hmm. It's very, very personal. It's very core to who we are.
Yeah.
And it's not something that we talk about openly with others because of the private nature of it. And there's culturally, it's taboo. Mm-hmm. You don't go talking about openly. And there is an aspect of it that's, let's just be honest, weird.
Yeah.
There's a weird part about, it's a very weird part of being human. So it's not, sex isn't all cleaned up and proper and prim all the time.
Right.
So it's an aspect of us that we don't tend to advertise or hide.
Right.
Or so we hide it, I mean.
Yeah.
So because of that, I think a lot of couples struggle with having honest conversations about sex, or individuals even understanding or relating to their own sexuality in a healthy way. Mm. And I think you tend to go one of two directions in an unhealthy way. One is very indulgent. Mm-hmm. This is where you're more boundaryless. Anything goes, and you just go for it. Or the opposite is where you squash it down, try to hide it, try to pretend it's not there.
And not to enjoy it.
And suppress it and not enjoy it. And it's either option I don't think is very healthy, because in order to thrive as a human, we need to have a healthy relationship with our own sexuality, just like you would have a healthy relationship with food or a healthy relationship with anything that can give you pleasure and goodness in your life. So that's, I think, because it's not talked about as much, we don't get enough education. That's one aspect of why I think individuals and couples struggle with it.
And also the fact that, you know, they're not being truly intimate with each other. You know, what kind of a relationship is it? But we've never been told that intimacy and sex are part of building a relationship.
Absolutely. I think a person can survive without it. Like, you're not going to die without it, right? You can survive without it. But if you want to thrive, I think it's an aspect that you absolutely need in your relationships.
Absolutely.
So because we're in the kind of the blind and disabled community, there's a lot of trauma and I want to say stigma around navigating this topic. When you have dealt with people, and trauma is kind of a universal language, whether you have a blindness or a disability, or you have, you're just an average Joe or average Betty just walking down the street. Mm-hmm. When you address these awkward topics, where do you start trying to heal some of that trauma?
Well, first is, let's just acknowledge no human, no adult is without some degree of trauma in this area. And trauma can be like, they say capital T trauma and lowercase t trauma, meaning major events, minor events. Like, so everyone, whether you have a disability or not, you're subject to some degree of some trauma around it. Meaning, when I say trauma, what I mean by that is some situations or some memories or some thoughts kind of give you a trauma response where you feel like flight or fight or freeze or something like that, right? Like an irrational response to something regarding something to do with sexuality. And for example, for me, I was born in Japan and I lived in Japan till I was 8 years old.
Wow.
And being the only blue-eyed, blonde-haired kid in my school, I stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right? And I'm in an elementary school or kindergarten, and kids are curious. So when I'd go use the bathroom, I'd close a stall. The boys would press their eyes up against the cracks of the stall because they want to peek. They want to see me because I'm so different, right?
Right.
Yeah. I don't blame them at now looking back. Like, hey, we're curious,
right?
We're very curious.
Right.
But, the boys are just boys.
But that's
like a trauma that I guess a lowercase t trauma that I've had. It's like, I felt very, intruded upon. And like, so I think everyone carries some aspect of this, into their, which is part of the growing. This is, why I think sex and intimacy in this work is so fulfilling, because as you learn to unpack these things, it's actually gives us a platform to grow on and become a strength in the end.
Well, I think one of the problems we have in the disability community in general You know, I saw a figure of 84% of women with a disability report sexual abuse, sexual assault in their history. And that is an incredible number, because part of the reason being that I think is because people see people with disabilities as being very vulnerable. So when somebody has that kind of experience and then is wanting a relationship with someone, you know, that's got to be the lens through which they may experience themselves and perhaps the other person. And it really gets very almost like there's some of this assault or the trauma being repeated over and over again until they learn, oh, I don't have to put up with this. Just because I'm disabled, I don't have to be treated this way.
Mm.
And,
right.
And that's one of the gratifying things in terms of the work that we do to help people realize that.
Yeah. I don't know the source of that statistic, but it's unfortunate that it's so high.
Mm-hmm.
Any unwanted sexual attention, any unwanted, like, non-consensual sexual touch that's not welcome. And if you grew up thinking that's just the way things are, mm-hmm. I have to give into this, I have to...
Right.
And then you start creating strategies, right? Like disassociation is a popular one.
You got it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. In the middle of being touched or whatever, fondled, whatever it is that you don't like, in order to cope with it, you're going to start to disassociate. Then later on, you get into an intimate relationship.
Exactly.
You've kind of created those neural pathways of these habits. Mm-hmm. I'm going to disassociate in it. And then it's really hard to use your sexuality to build an intimate relationship when you've used it as a way to disconnect from reality up until then. So there's a lot of healing that can go on for that.
So exactly. I want to park there for a second because you bring up an interesting point. When you have somebody who has been through that kind of either capital T, lower T trauma, you have people who have built that wall either consciously or subconsciously. When you have somebody who's gone through the trauma, they clearly have to go through their trauma on their own and do that self-healing. But does the healing get more enhanced when you bring in that other person and you work on that problem as a couple? Does it help? Does it hinder the process?
I would say it depends. And I know we hate those answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's say the other person in the relationship is very patient, mm-hmm. very kind, is going to go at whatever pace you need for your healing, mm-hmm. and just be your biggest cheerleader and biggest support through this.
Yeah.
And I think that I can't think of a better combination that would help you accelerate your healing than being with a partner like that.
Yeah.
But if you're with a partner that's impatient about it, like,
right.
come on, we've been at this for months. Right. Can't you just get it on? Like, exactly. What about my needs?
Right.
I need my needs met. Exactly. Or if you use mm-hmm. those language and then it just pressures it, then I don't think it's going to, it might slow down the healing growth. So it really depends on who you're paired with and their approach to it.
Yeah. And that's an important point because it can heal, but it has to be handled in a way that's beneficial. And the other person who, you know, is not party to it is going to be very confused, and that person's going to need a lot of support.
Yes. Yep. I think one of the best solutions for healing sexual abuse is having good sexual experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, it's because we're embodied people. We experience traumas in our bodies, mm-hmm. but we also heal the traumas with our bodies. So by having those positive sexual experiences can help us rewrite those stories. And pleasure is so important to not only just creating a stronger bond in an intimate relationship, but also a healing. Pleasure just has this ability to heal. Heal our minds, heal our bodies, heal our spirits.
I like that. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I like that too. The I think there are two pieces to it. One is that we've been so conditioned, as we said in the introduction, to not talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just getting used to the idea of having fun
with
sex instead of being an obligation or having to produce a child or all this kind of, to just having fun, it's almost like a radical way of thinking about sex
for sure
these days.
Right. And part of my coaching, I have the privilege of helping women who've never had an orgasm, help them learn how to have orgasms.
Mm. Or
usually men don't have that problem.
Right.
The first thing that the women that really make progress in this is, it's exactly that. They have to let go of an outcome.
Right. Mm.
Like if they think I have to have an orgasm in this, it gets in the way of it.
Right.
It's instead.
Well, that happens to men too.
Men absolutely.
The performance anxiety. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right, right. And instead, just say, we're just going to have a pleasurable experience and do only what feels good right now.
Mm-hmm.
And once you kind of really embody that mindset, then all of a sudden, orgasms start to happen. So
exactly.
Well, we've kind of danced around this question, so I'm just going to straight up ask it. How emotional or... Can you share some examples of like how emotional and physical intimacy can be cultivated despite maybe physical limitations that might be present with either one partner, both partners? Can you just talk about that for a little bit?
Yep. So the question is, how do you cultivate more emotional intimacy?
Yeah.
And I love this question. Emotional intimacy is the foundation for, I think, any intimate relationship. Mm-hmm. Can two people who just meet have sex? Yes, they can. But is that going to build a strong, long-term, intimate relationship? I don't believe so.
Mm.
And I also personally believe the very best sexual experiences are also very intimate experiences. Mm-hmm. There's more of a soul sharing. There's more of it's very bonding.
Sure.
It's about your hearts coming together. So if you're going to want to have those kind of experiences, then you have to learn how to connect emotionally. And generally speaking, there are differences between men and women. And this is broad brush, and of course there's going to be exceptions. But women need a stronger emotional connection first in order to feel they can open up physically.
Yeah.
And men generally want the physical connection first for them to feel safe to open up emotionally. So there's a little bit of a chicken and egg going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it needs to be a problem. It's an opportunity for both people to grow and lean into each other. I think emotional intimacy begins by learning how to speak emotionally. And this is something couples don't really know how to do.
Right.
And but when I say speak emotionally, like I can, at the end of the day, turn to my wife and tell her about my day, and I can say it in a way that's a lot about the facts and the figures and the schedule and the day-to-day, what happened. But I can also tell her about my day from an emotional standpoint.
Mm.
I could tell her about a time today I felt angry or upset or embarrassed. I could tell her about a time I had some fear, or about some time I was elated or had joy. I just watched the movie Inside Out.
I love that movie.
Right?
Yep. Did you watch the second one or the first one?
Yeah, we watched the second one recently.
Yes.
If you think like those characters, you have fear, anger, disgust, whatever, joy, whatever.
Yep.
Just think about it. Just use those as your guideposts for a conversation with your spouse. Like, tell your spouse about the time you felt this emotion. And this is how you speak emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a skill you can cultivate. Now, when you're talking with your spouse, you're speaking in emotional language.
Mm-hmm.
And emotions are the number one human universal connector.
Right.
And I think that's why you like the musical Hamilton so much, just because of the emotion involved and the humanity. They're so human, right?
Yes.
They make these mistakes, yet they have honor to live up to. And, and then there's pride involved. Like there's just all this human emotion. And that's why we connect so much with these characters. And the music is fantastic too. That's the language of emotional connection in a relationship. It's, can you undress emotionally and can you share things emotionally? There's a part of us that wants to guard some of our emotions. Mm. Like the other day, my wife and I were, we have a ritual about connecting emotionally.
Nice.
And not to make it so formal, but we push ourselves at the end of the day to speak
right.
about these things. And I told her of something I was embarrassed about, something I had done
nice.
that she didn't know about, but I was embarrassed. I had said something to a friend that I was later on regretted that sure. I said it that way. And that's hard for me to share because yeah. I don't have to tell her that.
No.
Right? She has no knowledge of it. And but as I get the courage to open up, to share with her, then she gets a clearer picture of who I am. Mm. And that's intimate.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. letting someone into my private space. And I think that's how you do it.
Well,
it takes courage.
Yeah. Even before we started this recording, I was confiding in Bill that, you know, sometimes I go through life and right now in this stage of life as a single dad, I tend to put on the Superman costume because in a manner of speaking, I have to. There are some times that I just have to put on that costume and I just have to buckle down and get the things done that I need to get done. There are other times that taking off the cape feels so almost burdensome that I don't want to take it off because I'm just going to push and push and push. And oftentimes when you're doing that in relationship, and I see this more maybe with men, maybe I don't know if you've seen this more with men, but we tend to carry that stuff because we think, oh, if I drop the stuff, if I put down all the bags of groceries, if I get off the white horse, if I look human for any sort of second, my wife is going to see no respect. She's not going to want me. She's not going to all those misconceptions or those negative thoughts that we have in our mind.
We're trained that way.
And we're just built that way. We're naturally that I'm going to do everything, pull myself up by my bootstraps kind of people. That's just how we're designed and created. But what I've learned is it's not necessarily about the partner and being worried about getting off the horse that is the scary part for men, because we can get off the horse with other men that we're around and we'll josh and banter and poke fun at each other. But we know how that kind of works. We understand that language when it comes to other men. But I think for me, the fear of getting off the horse is, am I going to be kicked when I get off that horse by my spouse? Is she going to see me? Is she going to validate some of those feelings that I come off the horse? If I put down the cape, if I carry one bag of grocery in instead of, you know, 18, you know, it's like, it's just one of those things. And so for men specifically, because we're all dudes here, how do we navigate this emotional turmoil of getting out of superhero complex mode and being emotionally vulnerable to the people we need to be emotionally vulnerable with?
I'm coaching a couple that's going through this right now.
Nice.
And that's the thing. You might get kicked by the horse, but can you handle the kick?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Yeah. You might be shamed for only carrying one bag of groceries instead of 18. But can you handle that?
Sure.
I think that's where the rubber really meets the road is, can you handle being kicked?
Yeah.
Can you handle disappointment?
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. for this mm-hmm. particular couple I'm coaching, for him, their marriage has revolved around to the point where if he gets a whiff that she's like the shop is closed that night,
yeah.
like it's not going to happen.
Right.
He likes to escape. Mm. He'll go watch TV or hang out with buddies or whatever instead. And it really bothers her because then she feels like he's not interested in the whole of her, only when she can put out for him.
Right.
So it's mm-hmm. and then she's defiantly going to hold back even more.
Right.
Right.
Natural.
She's not going to.
Totally. Right?
Exactly. So then they enter into the cycle and then they it just goes on. And
yeah.
On.
Yeah.
And for his role in this, now she has a role to, mm-hmm. They're both co-creating this dynamic. So that's important to see. She has a role to play in it. He has a role in it. But talking to him, the idea of him being emotionally vulnerable for her is scary because there's a chance that if he lets down his guard, takes off his mask, puts down the cape, that she's going to see him weak,
right,
or see him in some light that he doesn't want to be seen in. So it's easier for him to keep his distance rather than to become emotionally close in those. And he's got to work on pushing himself. Let me take it this way. We use the term be vulnerable. Mm. Like Brené Brown made this term very popular in our current culture, right? Mm-hmm. Be vulnerable. I think the misconception there is actually we don't want to be vulnerable because the most vulnerable people tend to hide.
Yeah.
They're the ones that keep the armor on. They don't get off the horse. They keep the cape on because they are vulnerable.
Yeah.
What we want is people who are open, that can handle vulnerability. So it's about being able to tolerate. It's about tolerance.
Yeah.
I can tolerate the discomfort of exposure here in this intimate relationship. I can be more open with you, and I can handle more vulnerability.
Yeah.
It's not that I am being vulnerable on purpose, per se. I'm not exposing myself to real hurt.
Yeah.
But I can take a kick from a horse,
right,
and I'll be fine. It's that kind of a mentality.
I like that.
And when you have somebody, for example, who had recently become, has lost their sight, they begin to feel less than. Mm. And then it becomes even scarier to allow yourself to be seen by someone who's not quite at being vulnerable, because somehow they seem, because I have a physical disability, therefore I'm less than, and I'm going to have to hide it in some way, or I'm going to have to avoid any situation where I can't handle it because it's just too scary.
Mm.
Right, right.
And in a relationship,
In the relationship, like in the intimate relationship, I think the more we hide, the more trouble we're going to have building intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. Absolutely. Because that's what builds intimacy, is our being able to be who we are, or to reveal who we are.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
so it takes an incredible amount of courage.
It does.
Listeners can realize that. This isn't for the faint of heart.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that we've spent so many times, this is true in my life, so I'm speaking just from me, but you spend so many times, or that time, trying to demask or make a safe place for that person consciously, only to say, oh, wait, now I have to remove my mask. I don't want to do that. Because, I mean, we want people to open up to us so we feel vulnerable, but it's a fake vulnerability, or it's a fake, I'm not sure what the best word to put in there, but it almost becomes disingenuous in a manner of speaking. But I love all of this stuff. I had one more question. When you talk about the healthcare industry, and you talk about the conversations that need to be had, what are you seeing, or how can we navigate these conversations with either our spouses, the people that we're with, our kids? How should the dialogue start?
All right. So you can start by talking about your wishes, your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
You could start by talking about what is going well, what's not going well. I think a powerful question to ask yourself is, what are my current attitudes towards sex and intimacy, and how do I wish my attitudes were different? Because for some couples, sex and intimacy really revolves around, for example, a lot of the couples I coach, it'd be, I do sex for him. It's a man's need.
Right.
And when it's done in that way, I think it precludes the couple from really gaining the most they can out of their sexual relationship, because pleasure is just as much for her as it is for him.
Sure.
So that's like an example of an attitude. I really think we could be better here if my attitude changed around this, or if I thought of it that way instead. So that's like one example of a conversation you can have. You could talk about your favorite moments that you've shared together. You could talk about some of your peak experiences that you've had together. You could share your ideas, fantasies, things that you find would be really fun to try, fun to do. And if you can take a playful attitude about when it comes to sex, I think it makes it something both people are much more happy to participate in. Instead of something about something you have to do or an obligation or a need to fill, then that's not play. It's sex belongs in the realm of play, in my mind.
Right. I wonder if a conversation can start, too, when we talk about our family attitude towards sex and talking about it or not talking about it, more likely not talking about it. Mm-hmm. And what do we know? What did we notice about our family of origin around sex? Because then we can kind of compare notes and then go from there to say, well, you know, this is what I've learned. Or, boy, I didn't know people grew up in families like that. And sometimes that can break down some of the barriers. When we're talking about something distant and then begin to bring it to something close, I would imagine. I've done that with couples.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I like that.
Well, this has been a really interesting conversation. Dan, how do people, if they have questions or they want to get to know you more, how do people get a hold of you and experience all that stuff?
Great. My website is called getyourmarriageon.com. Mm-hmm. And on my website, you'll find information about my podcast. I have information about my programs. I also have some mobile apps for seeing people about ideas and how to improve intimacy. And I have games and things like that that are published inside the mobile apps as well.
And those apps actually do work with screen readers. So they're like with the iOS, if you have an iPhone or Android, they are accessible in that manner. So they do work. They're awesome apps. I love them.
And you might have a sense of humor as you hear Siri saying off some some different words.
Well, and it's fun because like with the games, you can program them to, you know, you have these code words that you have for your spouse and you can, you know, if her name is Cupcake, you can say Cupcake, you know, like different things. Fun. You can use your couple language, I think, as you have it in there. But
that's right.
It's such there are two wonderful apps and you guys have actually partnered with the Dating Divas and they've got a whole ton of stuff on there as well. So, I mean, it's really, really good stuff. So if you want to build that intimacy, I highly recommend that.
Great. But thank you very much.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Great. Well, Bill, what are some of your final thoughts?
Well, one of my final thoughts is it's been great to have you on board. I would love to, we're working up a resource list at AfterSight for people who want more information, but also to keep in mind, I'd love to call you again and see if we can have another program.
Yeah.
Because this is so important and we just don't do it. We don't talk about it. And I think this has been just great for me. And for our audience, I want to remind them that we have a feedback line. It's written email feedback@aftersight.org or telephone feedback. Our feedback line is 720-712-8856. And you can give us feedback and ideas for programs and so forth. I hope that people have been listening and thinking about what Dan has shared with us, and it will hopefully make a difference. What are your last thoughts?
Well, I don't have a whole lot. I've kind of spoken my mind. I am interested, Dan, though. If there was one thing you wanted to leave our audience with, what would that be?
That'd be just in this last half hour or so. We've only just scratched the surface.
Oh, yeah.
This is just very, very, very surface level. There's so much more depth in what we could do. So I would encourage you to take your own sexual questions seriously. Mm. Maybe write them down or think about them and take the courageous step to getting your questions answered. Make today, I believe today is the most important day of your life because today is the day you can actually do something about things.
Yeah, for sure.
And why not have a greater fullness of pleasure and joy in intimate relationships in our life?
Yeah.
And we do that by just finding answers to our own questions. So push yourself a little bit. Just find one more answer to a question that you've always thought about and then do it.
Absolutely. Love that. I'm so thankful, Dan, to know you and to, I've been listening to your show for a long time, following you guys, and you've been a blessing in my life. So I appreciate all the work that you guys have done. Bill, good talk, man.
Yeah, it really was very good to get to know you, Dan, today. And I certainly will be looking at the materials that you're making available. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.